Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Jerry Dugan. Jerry's an Army veteran, the host of the Beyond the Rut podcast, and author of the book by the same name, Beyond the Rut. And we recently met at the Podcast Movement conference in Las Vegas, where he gave an outstanding talk for podcasters to help fill in their show with guests that meet their audience needs. It was really an incredible talk. I'm not just saying this because he's on the other end of the mic right now and he's sitting here listening to me, but I honestly thought it was one of the best talks that I heard all week while we were at that conference. So it was definitely enjoyable to not only hear him talk, but also to get to meet him in person. We've been following each other on social media for a little while now, but finally to meet in person was pretty incredible too. So with that, welcome to the show, Jerry. I'm glad to have you here.
Awesome, Scott. Thanks so much. And thanks for the compliment too. That puffs up my ego a little bit more than my wife wants it to be. She can't stop it. It is done.
It's done. That's a done deal. So for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. You mentioned all the basic stuff. And, you know, when I joined the Army, I was essentially a failed pre-medical student. So I was a chemistry biology major with a whopping 2.1 GPA, which I probably wasn't supposed to have. I think my faculty advisor leveraged a rule that had just been passed to allow him to cancel out some failed grades to go from, because I think I was tracking a 1.93, and I just went to get my transcript before I left for the Army. And I remember the registrar asking me, "Hey, do you want to pick up your diploma while you're here?" And I looked at my dad because he came with me, and I looked back at the registrar and I was like, "Yes, please." And as soon as she left to go print it off, I turned to my dad. I said, "As soon as we get that form, we got to bolt out of here, Dad." And he's like, "Why?" "I think they made a mistake. I don't think I'm supposed to have this." And so she handed me the transcript. She handed me the degree. And I was like, "Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to know you these past 4.5 years. I wish you the best." She goes, "No, I wish you the best." And then I left my dad behind. I walked out fast, looked at the transcript, saw the GPA, and I'm like, "Oh, Dr. Richmond, he was awesome. He let me go." And I mean, he knew I was leaving for the Army to be a medic and all that stuff. But he also recognized something in me, and that was I did not want to be a doctor. And he knew because he was also the faculty advisor of other pre-med students who were passing their classes because some guy named Jerry Dugan was tutoring them. And so he's like, "Jerry Dugan." And they're like, "Yeah, Jerry. Yes. Dugan. Yes. Jerry Dugan. Yes. He's tutoring you and you got an A or a B in that class. Yes. He's failing that class." Like, how the heck? And so I think he knew deep down, this guy does not want to be a doctor. He doesn't even like doing this work. He's in it because somebody else told him to. So anyway, that's in a nutshell, me, my life, and why Beyond the Red exists, because I was actually pursuing not my dream to be a doctor. I was pursuing my mother's dream to be a doctor. And it wasn't until I went through 4.5 years of undergrad, got the degree and ran, did 4.5 years of Army life. Both of these were 4-year commitments, by the way. They just gave, you know, I just got an extra 6 months. Why not? But it was after that I realized I don't want to be a doctor. And even though the hospital I'm working for, doing training for new employees, is offering to send me off to nursing school as a bridge to get me into the medical school I want to go to someday, and I'm turning that down. Why? I'm hesitating. Why? And that was it. It was like, this is not my dream. And Beyond the Rut, a lot of folks are finding success, but they're not pursuing their own dreams. And so they feel stuck in a rut. They feel stuck in life. They're doing a work that probably pays well, looks good on paper, but it's taking them away from their faith and their family and the things they really want to do in life. And yeah, I just love inspiring folks to thrive wherever they are and not lose their faith or their family in the process. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. And when I hear the phrase that beyond the rut and just being in that rut, and I think a lot of people have been there they've been working a job that they don't like, or you know, it's paying the bills, it's not exactly what they want to do, they're not passionate about it, and they're every Monday they're struggling to get out of bed to go to work. And it reminds me of this commercial from way back, probably back when we were kids. There's this guy, he's got the nice house in the suburbs. He's got the nice lawn. He's riding on the riding lawnmower, and he's got this fake smile on his face, and he's got the 2.5 kids or whatever, and the two cars in the driveway. And he's like, I got all these things, and I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. And it's like,
what
a smile on his face. Right. And it's like, nobody wants that. Like, ask any kid right now, like go grab a kid off a playground, not in a creepy way, but like go talk to any kid on the playground. It's like, hey, in 30 years, do you want to be in debt up to your eyeballs? And, you know, with all of this crap that you don't really want, they'd be like, no, that sounds awful. Like being an adult sucks. Like, no, I don't want to do that. So when you think about that beyond the rut, there's more than just that grind, that dead end job that you have, that just miserable experience that you're going through. Right. And you kind of found that in your own life, right? You doing something that you were not passionate about. And you clearly knew what you were doing, because if you're able to tutor somebody and they were able to get A's, but you're failing, there's something else going on there, right? That, you know, what is causing you to not pass those classes, but these other people are passing with flying colors? Clearly you knew your stuff, but you just weren't 100% in it, right?
Yeah. And I wasn't even paying attention to the external sources that were giving me glimpses into where I was gifted or where my strengths were. Like my faculty advisor, Dr. Richmond, like he put it all together. He's like, okay, the guy is failing science classes while tutoring people to pass science classes. This guy can teach. He's passionate about it. He's willing to help other people succeed. He is sabotaging himself in this particular field. And he asked me, have you considered switching over to education? And, you know, like 19 or 20 at the time. And I said the dumbest, cockiest thing you could say. And that was, you know, those who can't teach. And I'm saying this to a professor.
I was just going to say to someone who's teaching.
Yeah. And that was probably the last time I saw him smile when he ran into me. Like, oh, I'm stuck with this brat. Okay, got it. He signed my form, sent me on my way. And, you know, he was always cordial to me. But, you know, it was like, this guy's not going to get it. He's going to just do it the hard way. And then, you know, in my Army life, you know, I'm in there as a medic. And I keep getting pulled out, whether it was basic training, AIT, my actual duty stations. I was getting pulled aside and asked, or actually when I say ask, I mean, I'm told, you will make sure that guy passes basic training. You will make sure that whole class of yours passes AIT to become medics. You know, we have this thing called sergeant's time in the Army. Every Thursday for the half a day, you learn and relearn your basic skills, and it's led by the sergeants. Well, I'm an E4, so not even a sergeant. And I'm being told you're going to teach people how to, you know, go to the bathroom while, actually I made that one up. Like it was in the manual, but how do you go to the bathroom when we're in a chemical environment? You know, like, you gotta know, guys. And they're like, right. It was a crappy lesson. I'm like, no way. And so, but teaching people that, and people would tell me like a year or two later, like, I still remember how to take a dump if we get slimed. And, but you know, people are tasking me to do training and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, fine, whatever. And then finally my first job out of the Army that would pay the bills was to do training for new employees and even bridge the gap for high schoolers to get experience in the hospitals. And then, so finally, when I was going for my master's degree, I'm thinking in my head, I need to go after an MBA because, you know, the guys who make the big bucks in corporate life have MBAs. They run businesses, they own businesses, and then they make the big bucks. And I shared that with my wife and she looked at me, she nodded and she kind of squeezed or furrowed her eyebrows a little bit. And she said, I don't think that's the thing you need to do. And I'm like, well, okay, Miss Smarty Pants, what do you think I should do? And she's like, you need something in education, you know, education, training, you know, that kind of thing, because that's what I've always known you for, even when we met in the Army. And I'm like, what does she know? And as soon as I thought that in my head, like my whole life flashed before my eyes, but in the lens of training, 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 tutoring, training, training, tutoring. And I'm like, son of a gun, all these people were right. I do love teaching people and training people. So I went, I got a master's degree in educational technology / instructional design. So it was like, the dream thing, like learning about learning and learning psychology. And, you know, from there, I really saw my career take off. My income quadrupled in the span of really about 10 years. So from about 10 years, 2013, when I graduated with my master's in a year and a half. Yeah, that was a brag, guys. I'm sorry. and then, you know, you fast forward to the end of 2022, my income had quadrupled from what it was. And, you know, just it doubled every time I moved to another job or another position. And that was just amazing. And that for me was just I wasn't measuring my worth based off of the income, but I was seeing a tangible result of working in alignment with something I love and I'm passionate about, which is helping other people have their aha moments and improve their skill sets, their mindsets, the way they cognitively work through solving problems.
Yeah.
That gets me fired up. So,
and I could tell too, like there's a difference between someone, you got those people who they're ultra successful financially, right? They're rich beyond imagination. They get all these, you know, great contracts and jobs and all these things are going their way. Everything's going great. It's on paper. Everything looks great. But they're dying inside. Mm-hmm. They are not doing okay. And then you take someone like yourself and you're following what your actual passions are. And you're doing those things. And it's interesting that you went into the medical field in the Army, despite not wanting to be a doctor.
Yeah.
In the civilian world. Right. But still there's that teaching component to it. And I think you probably could have ended up in any job in the military and still been able to teach people. I know as a sergeant in the infantry, I was teaching people infantry stuff, right? There's teaching that goes on no matter what branch you're in, no matter what MOS you have, doesn't matter. There's always some sort of teaching and lessons that go on, especially when you start advancing into the leadership levels. But you know, you take this and you've figured out, hey, this is my passion, teaching, education, that type of stuff. That's getting out of the rut, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Essentially. Because I could have done what most people do, like, oh no, I went to school. I went to college to get into medical school. I joined the Army to go into medical school. I got a lot of writing on this. I need to, and my workplace is offering me for free to go to nursing school as that bridge to get into medical school eventually and go in with medical experience. Now I can offset the mistakes of an 18, 19, 20-year-old snot-nosed know-it-all who was lazy and self-sabotaging and then be miserable in the actual hospital or a clinic. Right. And the thing I started to realize was thinking about spending 10 to 12 hours on a floor in a building with very little looking out the window and pondering and wanting to, and just being there 5-6 days a week, I felt trapped. It was like, I can't take a day off because somebody might die. I'm like, oh wow, that's a lot of weight on my shoulder. I can't go to a kid's birthday because somebody called in sick. And if I don't go into cover, somebody's going to die. And I was like, wait, I left the Army for this kind of pressure. It was like, if I don't go on this mission, somebody else will, and they might die, or I've got to go to protect my country, protect my family. And it was that aha moment of, I can't work in a building and that's it. Like I'm stuck in that building. So there was a passion piece there that I recognized. And then of course the actual job part of it, like the only way I'd be happy working in medicine was you just send me to every war zone and just like patch people up. And because in field medicine, you could yell at people like, shut up, be quiet, quit moving around. And my bedside manner, as nice as I am, that was my bedside manner because that's how I practiced it. Cause you know, field is different.
Oh, so, it definitely is different. And in the military medicine is, I mean, I think the bedside manner with the experiences that I've had with military medics and doctors and things like that, bedside manner kind of goes out the window.
Oh, yeah.
In a lot of cases. You know, on occasion you'll get someone who's nice and kind of softer and, you know, whatever, but
yeah.
For the most part, it goes out the window. It's like, you know, change your socks, drink water, suck it up, buttercup, let's get moving.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. In a military, in a civilian hospital, somebody who's had like gastroenteritis, diarrhea, vomiting, you're not going to hear the nurses and the doctors say, hey, get up. This isn't a bed and breakfast. But in the Army, if somebody's in the aid station for that, you know, getting an IV, getting Phenergan so they won't be throwing up anymore, and it's chow time and they can't move because they're drugged up and they're wobbly and they're like, I can't get, you know, a kilometer down the road to the chow hall. You'll hear a doctor say, hey, get up, soldier. This isn't a bed and breakfast. And then they get up and they go, IV, like still attached to their arm. Like,
yeah, wheeling the thing down the road, like going down to go get chow. Yeah.
I'm like, this doesn't seem right. Like, couldn't any one of us just gotten him a plate? And
right.
Should he be eating anything in the first place? Like, he's on a brat diet to begin with. And, but it's just like that harsh, you know, suck it up. Yeah. You're in a combat zone or a pretend one for training, and a very different style. But I know I'm getting this off track here, but yeah, it was. So, for the first 30 years of my life, just pursuing somebody else's dream and then realizing, no, you know, training and development is the thing. But even before I got to that realization, I left my corporate job to go into real estate sales because I thought it was all about chasing the money. And this was 2006, had a really good first year, you know, as far as rookies go. You know, a typical agent will sell about one or two homes on average. And I sold 7 in my first, not even a full year. I'm like, yeah, 2007, I think I put 22 sales on the books.
Wow.
But then 2008, the market caught up in Corpus Christi. It tanked and I was fighting for tooth and nail. I think I still sold 22 homes in 2008 2008, but my price point dropped tremendously.
I was going to say, yeah, that 22 homes in 2008 was not the same 22 homes in 2007.
And so price point dropped. I think to get those 22 homes, I had to put like 45, 50 homes into escrow. But then 2009, 10, and 11, it dropped. I think I was doing about 10 sales a year. Price point stayed low. I wound up having to take a job and then we hung up the real estate sales license and my wife asked me to never talk about this again, at least not in front of her. and the idea of getting my license again is off the table. Like yeah. Jerry is never to go back into real estate as an agent. I can go back in as an investor, just not as an agent.
Right.
And it was just, and a big part of it is because so many variables were a part of a transaction. Like it wasn't just based on what I did for the client. Like I depended on myself and the client and I needed the other agent and the other client to all kind of mesh and work together. And then I needed the home inspector to point out things that need fixing, but not so much that it scares people. I needed the repair guys to do their job on time, on budget, and so on. The title company had to pull up everything. Whoever owned the home in the past had to have all their ducks in a row. Otherwise, there's a title issue. The bank, not only is there the loan officer, but there's an appraiser on the other end. There's somebody originating the loan. There's somebody else reviewing all the documents. And there's lawyers in the background. All you need is one of these guys to have a bad day.
And the whole thing screwed up.
Yeah, you're not getting a $5,000 paycheck after a month and a half to 2 months worth of work. And you're like,
right.
I needed that so badly.
Right.
So it was in that we finally realized teaching and education was my gift, my skill set. And
I was going to say, you probably were not all that happy doing that because there's not a whole lot of teaching going on there. You're out there selling and being a salesperson is a different mindset than a teacher, educator. And then I also want to get into your podcast and your book as well.
Yeah.
So the podcast, you told an interesting story about how you got into that podcast and how it became yours. Would you mind telling the listeners a little bit about that?
So when Beyond the Rut originally started, there were three of us, the host of the show, Brandon, been a friend of mine at that time for about a decade. And we knew each other from church. We served in men's ministry together and he wanted to start a show that would help men who are married, they're in their 30s and 40s, they have kids, they have all the boxes checked of what success looks like, but they feel stuck in a rut. And the reason why he wanted a show about that is because as a pastor, he hears men come up to him every weekend. Hey, I can't get my wife to respect me. I can't get my kids to pay attention to me. My job sucks. How do I make more money in a job I love? Because that's what's holding us back. I'm in the current job I hate that takes me away from my family because we need the company car. All those things. And he would give them advice. And that was probably part of the problem. He was giving advice instead of coaching them to their own solution. But he thought, you know, it'd be great if I could just record my answers. Somebody somewhere out there will listen to it and actually apply it. So that's what started the show. There were three of us. The third guy, his name's Sean, he joined us early on because he's really good at writing. And He also bowed out really early on. So the show was really myself and Brandon for 5 years. And one day, early 2021, we have a discussion where it's apparent he pod faded without me. And pod fading is where you just sort of like phase out and fade away from the podcasting space. And so he was done with the show. He was ready to hang it up. He wasn't feeling it anymore. And it was at a time when I was amped up, ramped up, and wanting to build the show and make more impact with it. And so I was left with a choice. I either start my own show from scratch or build off this momentum that I was already noticing with other podcasters, with the listeners, and so on. And so I just asked Brandon, I'm like, hey, do you mind if I take over the show? And so February, we have that conversation and he hands everything over to me. And I'm like, awesome. Thank you so much. And it, even more awesome was that it was the beginning of the year and he already paid for everything in advance and he wouldn't take any money from me. So it was like his apology to me wasn't just handing over all the reins. He'd already prepaid for everything and refused to take any compensation from me to pay for those fees, like the domain name, the server, all those things. And I was like, okay, cool. Once I got all that settled, and this is the part of the story you also heard about in Las Vegas, was that it was now time to look at, all right, who do I interview next weekend? And there was nobody there. And so the evidence of that my friend Brandon had pod faded without me was starting to appear. It wasn't just that he wasn't marketing on social media and he wasn't bringing in new people to interview. And so I looked at March, nothing. April, nothing. The only guy I had left was in May, and it was somebody I had to reschedule because I forgot to hit record. The one time I forgot to hit record, and I just thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And so, I scrambled, got guests. And then as I'm doing that, I didn't share this from the stage because the topic was so narrowed down to how do you find guests. But I also had to rebuild connections on social media that, you know, we had stopped following people over the course of the pandemic, and for different reasons. And I realized, okay, I got to reconnect with these guys. We love these guys. They loved our show. Why are we not following these guys back and engaging with them? Right. And, you know, I was just going through the social media trails and realizing, wow, we've been unplugged from the world for about a year at least, and it's time to get reconnected. And so that was my introduction into taking the show over. And, you know, since then, so 2 years later, I now have gotten the show to a point where it's consistently publishing twice a week. I just moved up into the top 1.5% on Listen Notes.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say that because I pulled up your show on there the other day, and I was looking, I was like, holy crap, he's killing it with this,
oh,
right?
Man. Yeah, just trucking along, publishing every single week, and yeah. Honing in on what the audience, the avatar that I had shared with you of the show, honing in on what they need and what they want to hear has really helped get that consistency going and move that needle up. And it sounds really cool on Listen Notes. And it's something that's humbling is that top 1.5% of all the podcasts in the Apple Podcast directory. So that's like, what, 3 million shows?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah. And the majority of them are defunct. They've all pod faded. So there's really about 300,000 shows. I think the lowest I heard is 200,000. The highest number I've heard is 400,000 shows that are live and active. So if you do the math of like, well, where does that put you in the top 1.5% of 3 million shows? I think it's like in the top 50,000 shows, give or take.
Which is still like pretty incredible. I mean, think about all the shows that are out there. And I mean, yours is specific to a certain demographic, the avatar that you shared in your talk. But there's true crime podcasts that are in that. It's a different demographic. Yeah. Different people are listening to that type of thing. There's other types of podcasts that are out there. And so if you were to even narrow that down to your specific category of podcasts, like it's even more impressive. It's not that 50,000. It's something even higher up than that. So I looked at it and I was like, man, this guy is, he's killing it out there. He's doing a great job. So I am definitely going to be snooping around and
awesome.
You know, kind of taking some best practices from what you're doing. So
awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. And I honestly, the show is great too, because the topic, I think you being the host is a perfect fit, being in that situation where you're in that rut, you're in college, you're studying for something that you were not passionate about. And like, you've lived it, you know that. And There's other people who are currently living it right now, today. They're in that place and they don't know what to do. It's like, I can't leave this job because I need the money, but I hate the job. There's this other thing I'd love to do. I just don't know how to make any money doing it.
Yes.
How do I fit that in to my life? Right. And so that's basically, I think, am I summarizing that in a nutshell? Like that, yeah. That's pretty much what you guys are talking about. Right.
And I don't know if I shared it from the stage in Vegas, but yeah, more recently I found myself in a rut and didn't realize I was there. And that's the essence of the book, is that if you're not cognizant of that rut and where you are in life, it'll sneak up on you and boom, put you in there. And it might be because I didn't have time, but it also didn't tie in with the specific topic of the talk. But yeah, the end of 2022, I'm attending Podcast Movement in Dallas in August, I believe. And I've got these ideas for the podcast. How am I going to grow the podcast? I really need to get my book finished and out there. That's been a goal for a long time. You know, it's been on Someday Isle way too long. I need to get this thing done. I need to make an investment to commit. And so I hired selfpublishing.com to get me there. And that's all at Podcast Movement. Well, I go back to work the next week, and it turns out all pandemonium just broke loose while I was gone. You know, not to get into too much detail, but there was a toxic element present that we could never address, and it reared its head up to a point where my team decided, I'm out, I quit. And now I'm left with a team that has quit, and my choices are either A, I stick around and rebuild the team, answering the awkward question of, so why did everybody quit in the last 6 months? Like, I can't tell you the answer because I report to the guy, you know, it's like, so how do I not throw that person under the bus? And then on top of that, it was like, but also by staying, am I condoning the behavior that happened and the words that were used? And I realized, yes, if I stay, I'm associating my brand as a leader with that person's brand as a leader. And that doesn't matter to me. Like, that's a no-go. But the deal clincher for me, because up to this point, I'm still thinking I can still, you know, I'm a good leader. I know how to do team building. I know how to communicate. It's still on me to kind of try to fix this. But something my wife had pointed out to me that weekend while, you know, we're trying to contemplate, what do we do about this? This is Labor Day weekend. And she just said, Jerry, quit the job. And this is Miss, I need security. I need to know that we have a plan for ourselves person in the family. She is the common sense in a way. And plus we're recovering from like what we experienced in real estate when the market tanked.
Right.
So just leaving your job is not a great idea. But here she is recommending this. And I'm like, what? I mean, that's how I feel, but it's coming out of your mouth. Well, I don't get it. What happened here? Did we switch places? And she said, Jerry, I've been up here in Dallas with you for the last year and a half in a job you've been in for 3 years. And the one thing it has been clear to me since I moved up here is that you're not happy in your job. And I thought this was a great move for you. I thought it was a great, you know, climb in your career. The pay is nice, you know, but the pay's not worth losing my husband. And I was like, but you're not going to lose me. She goes, well, maybe not in terms of marriage and divorce, no, but I'm losing him in terms of his happiness. That
right.
That bounce in your step has been gone for over a year. And you know, I thought it was me. And then I realized, no, it's not me. And it's not really you. It's kind of the environment you're in. But I can't tell you to quit your job, but I'm going to tell you now, quit your job. And I was like, wow. Okay. I need to think about that. And she said, besides, you remember when our daughter visited us before she moved up here? And I was like, yeah. Well, I didn't tell you this before she went back and I was dropping her off at the airport. She said, Mom, are you and Dad okay? And, you know, our 19-year-old, and she was probably 18 at the time, she had recognized there's a strain going on with Jerry. And her fear was that it was a marriage strain. And my wife said, no, we're fine. We love each other. I know he loves me. He knows I love him. But he is going through a lot at work right now. And that's what we're seeing. And Emma, she was like, okay, but I just worry for you. And it's so worried that she contemplated renting a 2-bedroom apartment when she moved up here, just in case Mom needed a place to stay. And I'm like, that breaks my heart. My baby girl thought that that's where we would go. But then her son visits a few months after that, and this is like a month prior to all this stuff falling apart. He goes home back to Corpus Christi, and then he calls my wife and he asks the same thing, independent of this other conversation that happened. And he's asking, are you and Dad okay? Same conversation. And Liv, you know, put his fears at ease, but it was clear to Liv by that point, okay, the job is straining Jerry so much that it's taken a toll on us in a way that our kids noticed.
It's noticeable at this point where it's not just a, you know, let's just stuff it down and deal with it kind of thing. It's boiling to the surface. That pot is overflowing now. Yeah. And you're noticeably upset and agitated, whatever it is that you're experiencing, to the point where they're concerned and probably rightfully so. Right.
Oh yeah. And here I am on a 3-day holiday weekend, staying up till 3 or 4 in the morning, contemplating, how do I talk to this guy? How do I convince my team to not quit? How do I fix what's happening? And it just kept coming back to the same result. It's not going to fix. Your choices are leave or stick around and be miserable and just collect the paycheck and wait for this guy to retire. And where are you going to be when that happens? Because he's probably got another 5 years left in him. And what about, you know, what else is at stake if, you know, you stick it out and you wait to get his job someday, or you grow, or maybe you don't grow, because have you really grown in the last 3 years? In some ways, yes. In some ways, no.
And it's hard to grow in a toxic environment too.
It is. Yeah. Like, there were some wins that I had that I could really brag about, but then, you know, somebody with 3 years of director experience in any other organization will have really grown and accelerated. And for me, I felt like I was just a glorified manager, not a director. I wasn't really driving or influencing the culture of the organization. I was just getting a paycheck and, you know, having somebody bypass me. So it was that. And so I put in my 30-day notice and put my focus on the book. It was like, all right, well, we're going to take 3 months off to focus on healing, finish this book, and then by January, decide what you're going to do.
And so there was no real plan outside of focusing on the book and your own well-being, you know, as far as income goes anyways, like there's no what's next for Jerry. It was, I'm out of here. I just know whatever it is not this, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Cause and beyond the rut, I ask folks to take a look at life, and this both in the podcast on a regular basis, but also in the book, the 5 F's, you know, how are you doing in your faith, your family, your fitness, finances, and your future growth or future success, just your future in general. And, if you feel stuck in life, you know, you just feel like there's this weight on your shoulders. There's this sense of like no hope really. Yeah, take a look at those 5 areas and how are things going? And so we took that job situation and we applied the 5 F's. Like, well, I still believe in God, so there's no impact there. Family. My kids think I'm about to leave my wife of 21 years, going on 22. And it's probably putting a strain on us. You know, my wife's having to deal with the sludge I'm bringing back from work. So there's a strain. And fitness, I think I wound up gaining 30 pounds to 40 pounds in the last year and a half. And I'm confident almost all of that was stress induced. And it's like, okay, physically, that's not good. Right. Emotionally, what's happening? I'm staying up till 2 or 3 in the morning thinking about how do I navigate my boss the next day? Even though I'm doing a great job, you know, I don't feel like I am, because I have 3 out of 4 people quitting on me. And the fourth one is just sticking around because I'm sticking around. And so that was a big eye opener for me, that I have a rut. It's impacting my family. It's impacting my fitness. Finances aren't impacted. They will be when I leave, but we had savings because of the 5 F's. We had, and I calculated, I was like, you know what? We can do everything we're still doing and have Christmas, and we're good for 5 months. We can pinch pennies a little bit and we can go 6 months. Income tax return will come in right around the end of the 6th month. That'll get us another 7th and 8th month out of that. And we also have a credit card if we really have to. So we can make it. We can go 6 to 8 months as we are. If we go beans and rice, we can go about 9 to 12 months. And she said, no, I like the first option. I'm like, cool. And then she's like, isn't there like an option C? And I'm like, yeah, option C is, screw it. We cash everything in. We have one great month and we celebrate, or we take a whole year off. And she's like, no, let's go with plan B. Yeah, that's or
yeah, middle ground. Yeah.
And so that's where we were and that's where we are. And the thing I didn't expect to do was to start a company, though. That was the big aha. Like, original plan was January, start looking for a new job. It'll take 2 to 3 months to find something in my field. Instead, November, I file for an LLC and I start BTR Impact, which delivers training and development for leaders who want to learn how to be a servant leader. So that's something I've been building and offering up. And right before I got on this call, I received a contract to do a leadership development series for a local hospital. And I'm like, what? Okay, cool deal. This is happening.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it fits too, because I think throughout your whole journey, I'm seeing this transformation going from you're in college doing something, studying something, I should say, that you don't want to be doing eventually, you know, being a doctor, and you're moving through your career, doing things, going in the right direction. You're making those course corrections. You're making those improvements, but it's not fine tuned. It's like a sculptor who gets this big block of marble and he just starts chipping away at it. You're making the right moves. You're going in the right direction, but it's not fine tuned quite yet. Yeah. It's not that clean polished sculpture. Like, you could tell there's a face there, but it's like, yeah, my kid could have drawn something better than that. You're getting it. You're moving in the right direction. Right. And then now you're in a situation where you are your own boss. And now you don't have to worry about toxic leadership or toxic employees or things like that, because it's you. And if, yeah. If there's anything toxic going around, you just have to look in the mirror and be like, okay, well, that's my problem.
It's me. Yeah.
It's my problem. I need to fix this problem so that it doesn't affect other people. Which I think you're intelligent enough to figure that out. And so, you know, but you've made all of these adjustments. And I think the reason why I'm bringing this all up is because for the people who are out there and they're stuck in a rut, that might be listening to this and say like, okay, well, that's great, but I don't have those finances saved up. I can't make this big drastic change. Well, you didn't make this big drastic change either. Mm-mm. Right off the bat. You made small incremental changes to the point where now you have something that's a little bit more fine-tuned. And, you know, obviously as a business owner, I'm, you know, I've had businesses myself. The next paycheck is never guaranteed. So that you lose some of that comfort. But as you continue to progress and grow, again, you're going to fine tune things even in this business, and it's going to get better and better and better. And you're going to get to that point where, yes, the next month's paycheck is pretty much guaranteed. You have the contracts in place, or you have the whatever deals that you're working on, that's in place. But none of this happened overnight. We're talking, I mean, how many years has this been since you were in college to now? I mean, we're talking decades that have gone by.
You have to say this on record here?
No, you don't have to say it on record. No, I totally put you on the spot there. And you totally don't have to say that.
It's over two decades. I'm 47 now. I graduated at about 23, so almost 25 years ago. So 1998 is when I left college. And yeah, so what, 25 years. This is the 25th year since I left college as an undergrad. And you know, a little less time since I got my master's. So about a decade since I got my master's degree.
But all of that, even the master's is just another incremental change. You know, you were originally thinking, you know, let's get the MBA and, you know, go out there killing it like all these other guys that are out there making tons of money and stuff, but that wasn't what you ultimately wanted to do. And so, yeah, you don't need an MBA to start a business. Like, anybody could start a business, right? And you have this marketable skill and you're out there, you're selling it. Clearly you just did after, you know, just before getting on this call. So, I mean, it's not like you're incapable of doing this, and you get to do exactly what you want to do. One thing I noticed when I had had a business is I was able to kind of pick and choose the people that I worked with. And if it didn't seem like it was a good fit for me, I was like, okay, well, yeah, this sucks. I'm not going to get this paycheck for this particular client, but I know that if I'm working with this person, it's going to kill me inside, and I can just walk away from it and no big deal, and focus on the next client and make things that much better for that client. So I'm not bringing the toxic person's crap into this person's world. That doesn't make a good customer experience. So, yeah, I mean, everything that you're doing is just those incremental changes to get to where you're at now. You know, even with the podcast and the book, you're doing all of these things. And I've written a book too. It takes time.
It does.
But you have to chip away. It's like eating an elephant. How do you eat it? One bite at a time. And it's the same thing with writing a book, starting a podcast. I mean, you just have to start and eventually you'll finish.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And the cool thing about this particular leap in general is it's not all fly by night either. Like some of the details are opportunities I didn't know existed a few months ago or a few weeks ago, even. However, the plan, like what I'm executing right now, was really what I was going to gradually build up to and launch 3 years from now. I mean, the book was still going to launch soon, but like a training business, a speaking, a public speaking business, a consulting business, all lumped under BTR Impact. That was a gradual growth over 3 years, so that when I decided maybe I do want to leave corporate life, there's this other thing I've been gradually building, and then now I can scale it up.
Right.
Well, instead of doing that, it was like, all right, well, instead of 3 years, let's get this thing ready in 3 months. And that's where we are. And it's like, okay, so we don't have the audience that we thought or yet. We know people though, and we could build that out and get the word out. And what are the priorities? And this is something my wife helped me really rein in. We actually had a business meeting. So when my daughter came in and moderated, my wife sat down with me, and it was like an intervention. I thought it was going to be an intervention, and it was in some ways. However, instead of saying, we don't think you should pursue business, it was, Jerry, we've been watching you for the last few weeks in your excitement of not being in your job anymore. It feels like you're going in 50 different directions, and we want to know, where are you? What do you want to do? What's the direction you want to go in? And I realized, now the planner in my wife has come in, and I'm realizing she is seeing my external processing of thinking out loud, sharing what I'm learning, as each one of these things is a plan I'm going to execute. So that meeting, that intervention, was all about, if you had a plan right now, what would it be? And this was a conversation we had back in, I want to say, the end of October. So a few weeks had gone by since leaving my job. And I shared with her, if we can help it, I don't want to dive right back into a corporate job. Not yet. That is our plan B or plan C, if all else fails. And so I showed her the finances again. I was like, this is where we are financially. And so this is where I have the room to play with to make this happen. Ideally, I want to start this company. Boom. That's actually stage two. Stage one is I need to get this book done, get it published, and get it launched, because that's going to feed into the speaking business and drive traffic to the podcast and help people change their lives. So that's one arm. The other one is taking what I love about my corporate job and doing just that, like a grandpa. You know, like I come in, I play with your kids, I give them back to the parents. I don't have to worry about the responsibility of the aftermath. And that's kind of like consulting and doing like guest training and speaking spots. You come in, you get to hang out with that company and help build their culture, help them learn something, and then you take off, let them handle all the reporting and the follow-up and all that stuff. And so that's what I love doing. And so I told her that's the second piece I want to work on, is the training component of the business. And then the third thing is really live out the dream that we've had. You know, I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to, when our kids get old enough and they're getting there, to have kids of their own and build their own families. I know one thing my wife wants to be able to do is be there for those grandkids and be there for our kids. And if we're broke and we don't have financial freedom and we don't have freedom of movement, you know, like our schedules are dictated by a boss, then we're not going to have that freedom to go and work from where we want, when we want, be with our family when we need to be there. And so I told her that's the third thing. We rebuild our savings and our financial freedom, and our mobility freedom, so that we can be with our kids when they need us and be with our grandkids when we want to be there. And she's like, I love that plan. And I'm like, cool. She's like, where'd you come up with this? I'm like, that's been the plan, all my life plan, for years. now's the time to execute it instead of 3 years from now. And she's like, wow. And my daughter was like, wow, you had all this? I'm like, oh yeah, it's tucked away on an Evernote somewhere. And I can email it to you if you don't believe me. She said, no, I don't feel like reading that. I'm like, that's cool. That's fine. So
yeah, but I mean, I think all of this is just, yeah, obviously you're accelerating this time frame, but I think all of this is really made possible because of a few things that you had going in the works.
Yeah.
And you may not have even realized that you had these things going for you years ago, perhaps, but you know, being smart with your money and putting stuff into savings so that you do have this financial freedom, because now you're not in this position where you're literally stuck in a rut and you can't get out because you financially, you can't afford to miss one paycheck.
Yeah.
That's not a great place to be. So you have a point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's where a lot of people are. They're stuck in that rut. They can't leave the job because they have no place else to go. And if they leave, they're broke and they'll miss their mortgage payment, the car payments, or all the other payments and stuff that they have going on. Maybe they can't even put food on the table at that point.
And so
being smart with your money, put some money aside every paycheck and put that in a rainy day fund so that you have something set aside so that you can survive for a few months if something happens where you have to leave a job for some reason, like in your case, or maybe you get laid off or fired, a company closes, something. I mean, there's unforeseen circumstances that happen all the time. I mean, just look a few years ago with COVID, where all these businesses were shutting down and there were people out of work all over the place and they had no savings to fall back on. I can't say everybody had no savings, but there were people out there with no savings to fall back on. And that was a terrible situation to be in for them. But the other thing that you had going for you, and you knew this was there, but maybe not to the extent that it made itself evident, it was just the family support and the family structure that you had, I think is super important. Your wife being there in your corner, like looking out for you, that's huge. Without that, if you had a crystal ball and like kind of looked back at your life without that support, maybe you'd still be in that job that you didn't enjoy and you were continuing to be miserable. And that misery is just going to compound itself. It's going to grow and grow and grow. And we wouldn't be sitting here talking to Jerry, who's smiling and having a good, positive attitude. We're going to be sitting to, you know, salty, pissed off Jerry, who's just mad at the world.
I love the work, but I hate my job. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Right. You know, so that's, I mean, that's a great thing too. And so I think for me, the takeaways here are, you know, plan for those unexpected things, have a backup plan, have the B plan, the C plan, even the D plan, if need be. Hopefully you don't have to fall back that many times on different plans, but you never know. It's nice to know that they're there. So should something happen, you have those backup plans. And then just taking stock of what your interests are and what you are capable of doing. What are the skills that you have that people actually pay money for? And get into that type of environment where you can let that go and unleash. And I forget who said it now, but I've heard the saying before, if you find a job that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Mm-hmm. And you think about all these people, Monday morning, they're standing in line at Starbucks, just hating the fact that they have to go into work and sit there for 8 to 10, 12 hours, whatever it is, doing their job. They're hating it.
And they're probably standing in that line to avoid or delay going into that job.
Yeah. It's not so much that they need the coffee. It's, just don't really want to get in there right now. So
I'd rather buy four coffees for the people at work than to be in there at work. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Let those suckers handle it.
Yes. Because if you love your job, you bypass that. You get right into the office early and you're like, I love this. Hey, right here. And you start getting things going.
And that's not to say that you have to fake it either. Like if you don't like your job and your job really is draining you, find something that you do love and find a way to make money at it. I did that for several years. I had a business that I was doing things that I absolutely loved until I didn't. And when it got to the point where I found I was just getting burnt out and it was not what I wanted to do, I sold the business and moved on to the next thing. And that's okay. It's not like, he's a failure because, he sold his business and he's not doing that anymore. It's like, no, I use it for what it was worth. It was great while I was doing it. Paid the bills. We kept a roof over our heads, everything like that, all through that job, or the business that I had. And it was great. I loved it. I got into work and I enjoyed what I was doing until I didn't. And then I just moved on. And that's okay too, I think.
Yeah. And Brandon, we talked about him earlier. It's exactly what he did too. Like, it's not bad that he pod faded and that he left the show. He left on really good graces in terms, like, he didn't have to not have me pay for that first year. He could have said, all right, it's like this many dollars and I pay him and here's your receipt and all that stuff. No, he handed it over and he said, I think you'd be the right person to carry on that torch. I'm happy to hear that you want to carry on that torch. He and I still talk. He wrote a review for my book and, you know, we still wish each other happy birthday and all those good things. And, it's just the pod fading is just where he was because 5 years into the show, he was now a grandfather of five. He had five grandkids. He didn't have that when we started the show. And so when you thought about, okay, it's recording day, we're going to spend 5 or 6 hours together. He's thinking about, I'd rather be playing with my grandkids right now.
Right. And that's, I think the point is life changes. Your interests, your priorities change. Yeah. Things change. And it's okay to pivot. I think pivots are not failures. They're just new information has been entered into the arena here. Exactly. And now we have to adjust to that, right?
Yes.
So awesome. Well, Jerry, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. Let people know where they can go to, first off, find your book and your podcast.
Awesome. So the book is available on Amazon.com. Just search Beyond the Rut. It's available as an ebook, as a paperback. And I just saw by the time y'all hear this, it's live on Audible as well. The audiobook is also available for sale on places like Spotify, Google Play, Apple Books, and so on. But if you want to hear the audiobook for free, there's two ways you can get it. You could buy a copy of the ebook or the paperback, and there's a page in there that tells you how to get it for free. Or if you want to bypass all that because you're like, I still don't know if I trust this Jerry guy, I'm giving away the audiobook for free. And just go to beyondtherut.com/audiobook, and it'll ask for your email. You get a copy of that audiobook and listen to it on your phone right then and there. And if you want, you can still buy a copy of the book. I'm not going to stop you. or maybe you hear it and you say, you know what, I want to pass this on to other people. Feel free to share either the audiobook link that I just did, beyondtherut.com/audiobook, or show them the listing or get a copy of the book for your friend, your family member, that neighbor across the street. I got friends who are buying. One of my friends just bought 20 copies for the people she knows in Indiana. And I'm like, that's a very specific place to hand them out. She goes, Jerry, you realize I live in Indianapolis, right? I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. That makes sense now. It's right. Not like, cause I knew her when she lived here in Texas. So for her to say she was buying them for people in Indiana, to me, it just sounded funny, but anyway, there we go. So if you want to buy them for other people, for your office, all that good stuff, you can do that as well. And I won't stop you. I really want the word of this book to get out. I wanted to inspire people to live their best life now because life is really too short to live stuck in a rut. So
it is absolutely. And the podcast is on, all the standard places where you can listen to podcasts. It's a great show. Definitely check it out after you're done listening to this episode. Go follow, subscribe to the Beyond the Rut podcast. Check it out. Definitely an awesome show. And again, really happy to have you on the show. And I really do appreciate taking the time. This was a really enjoyable conversation. I had an enjoyable conversation with you when we were in Vegas too. And I had no doubt that we are going to continue having a great time talking on this podcast as well. So thank you again.
Awesome. Scott, thanks for having me on here. I'm glad we finally did get to meet. I know we got the introduction from Bodie, Trip Bodenheimer. So thanks, Trip.
Yeah. Thanks, Trip. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.